For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
Probably the easiest thing I've ever done. The medication comes in the mail and it's very easy to use. I've been able to live my normal lifestyle and I've lost 20 pounds already and I've never felt better. It changed my life.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
A weekly segment that I do, I sit down with my friend 30 and So Gaming, and we talk about something in the gaming world. Sometimes we recap a bunch of different stories, but this week, Fallout is kind of having a moment right now. There's a lot going on with the franchise. The TV show's doing great. I tried out Fallout 76 this morning. If you're kind of interested in Fallout 76, what's it like for a brand new player, check out my video. It might help you decide whether or not you should or shouldn't play. And this video might help you, because I had a very different response than others are having. Mike's been playing quite a bit, so he'll tell you that. So thanks for being here, Mike. Appreciate you joining me again.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me.
I'm going to end the previous gameplay stream and bring people over with the redirect. And as you guys come over, do me a big, huge favor. Smash that like button. And if you're watching the past broadcast, do the same. It helps the video find more people. And we like to do regular talk show content here all of the time. So let's just start with what we just came from, because it's fresh on my mind. And if you guys haven't seen the gameplay stream yet, go check it out. You know, you're going to get to see those early stages. But I was like, okay, there's a lot of rough edges here. The further I got, the more I got in. I was like, there's a lot here making it tough for me to enjoy it. And I'll just, you know, Cliff's notes. Sound design is just not great. The guns don't sound good. The graphics are obviously, it's a PS4 game. And it also, they didn't really make it look any better than Fallout 4 did, which is okay for the time, but I think a lot of people anticipated it, you know, the 16 times the detail meme thing. And then just the flow of the game, world felt kind of empty, shooting felt fine, and then just the classic NPC drawn-out dialogue. I was like, yeah, this just isn't for me. I was expecting maybe a little bit more of a stripped-down experience, more streamlined, because it is this, you know, big open-world MMO. I did like the shelter thing that I found. Like, oh, you get to decorate your own shelter and do all of that. So, you've been playing quite a bit, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right, so...
Yes, I have.
Yeah, give me your version, then, of why the game captivated you, why you're playing, because I struggled with just the lack of more modern amenities I expect in a game now with graphics, sound, you know, and stream, even kind of streamlining things.
Well, I'm going to push back a little bit, because the way you describe the game, and don't get me wrong, when the game came out, it was a pile of trash, right? Mm-hmm. Let's be honest. Right? So I'm not going to be a fan of that. When it came out, I put a lot of time into it. When it came out, I put about 80 hours into it when it launched. I had fun with it, but it was a buggy mess, just like lots of other games. But the way you described it, it seems like that you had a preconceived notion before even playing the game that you already were going in not looking to like it. That's what it sounds like, because instead of just I tuned into your stream that you just did very late. So I know you went to level 20 right away. So you didn't kind of go through the vault or anything while you're in there. You've never played before, correct?
Yeah, this is my first time ever touching the game.
So
yeah.
You never played through the actual vault, sort of like the tutorial type of thing, trying to give you dialogue, teaching you stuff. Like, you never used the VATS thing. The VATS is completely different than Fallout 4 was. You can skip the dialogue. You can literally just go to the bottom of the dialogue boxes and just say, okay, leave and quit, and then you can just go on your married way. If you want to play the game where you're not doing, structured main story events. You can literally go to public events all the time and just level up and stuff like that. So there's a lot of stuff that you kind of just kind of glanced over because you were rushed, one, because you're trying to play it just to get some information and whatnot. So I don't think you gave it a fair shot. But at the same time, I don't think you need to give it a fair shot because I don't think it's your cup of tea of a game.
Well, I picked the level 20 thing and it says that's the best option. Do you think that people shouldn't do that? If they're new, they should start at the what was it, level 2, I think?
Yeah, you start the game just like you would like 5 years ago. But you, if they
you
actually
think, and you think that's you think that's better?
I think if you play the game, if you're playing the game for what it is, then yeah, I mean, if you play any game, why would you skip 20 levels to get to that level? You know what I mean? You're missing out a big chunk of stuff that you're, again, if you're going into the game to just do what you want to do, then yeah, go to level 20, go do public events, get some loot, level up your character. But if you want to play the game for what the game is, which is a story rich character, like a world building, then start from the start, because you are a vault dweller coming out of the vault.
Okay. Well, I mean, I'll be honest. I didn't go into it not wanting to like it. I thought, oh, wow, they've made all these updates. It's just going to be sort of this open world MMO. Like, I wanted to do looties and shooties, right? Just run around and shoot stuff. Yep. And I don't doubt that I could do that, right? Skip through the dialogue. Because I've played games where I get to the point where I'm like, I'm just going to skip the dialogue. I just want to get to the next. I don't really get invested in the world all that much. And I know that's, I'm not a Bethesdian fan. Like, Bethesda fans, they love that. Like, they want the dialogue. They want to have that element of crafting their own story, and I think that's fine. I think even if I would have done that, what you're saying, like done the more streamlined thing or skipping, you know, skipping the dialogue, I still struggle to get into a game that looks and sounds so just, I guess the sound was just poor. There were games back then that didn't have issues with sound,
but well, it's 5 years old, right? It's 5 years old, and it was meant for the PlayStation 4 and Xbox One, so.
But I can play a game like, you know, Ghost of Tsushima, and that was an old game too. That's a 4-year-old game, and it was PS4 game, and I think it looks beautiful. I think that's the engine, right? This engine just has continued to show its age.
Comparing Tsushima to Fallout 76, Fallout 76 was made in like 13 to 18 months, rushed out the door, where like Ghost of Tsushima was like 5 years in development, and like, you know what I mean? It was like completely two different things.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Okay, so that might help people make up their mind. They might be like, you know, Lono wrote it off too quickly. Maybe don't pick the level 20 thing. You know, maybe what I'm saying will help caution some people if they're like me, like, yeah, I don't want to do that either. Or maybe, you know, the sound design and the graphics will turn you off as well. Some people can just overlook that and they're like, I don't care about the graphics. I'm having a good time. Like,
sure.
Rise of the Ronin's combat is so good. I can overlook the fact that it also looks like a PS4 game. It's not a very great looking game. It's super inconsistent. Performance is rough in cities and towns, but the combat's just so good. And with Fallout, I was like, okay, the shooting is fine. It feels okay, but it, you know, it's just sort of a run-of-the-mill shooter. That's not the main offering of the game, right? It's all those other things. So all those other things, what sort of like, what are you doing right now in the game that like kind of keeps you coming back? What's the content loop look like for you?
Well, I played it for about over the 5 years. I played it right when it came out. I played it for a good 3-4 months. Got about 80 hours in. And then I stopped. And then I came back when they brought the NPCs into the game. Because when the game first came out, it's a completely different game now than it was. Like the quest line that you went on when you went in and like where the Han Solo ghoul looking guy was. That wasn't in the game. None of that was there. That building wasn't there. That storyline wasn't there. None of those people were there. So when you came out of the vault originally, it was more of a PvP main quest overseer thing, trying to repopulate what the world is. And then 2 years later, that's when they put this stuff in, and it's a completely different, they redid the entire storyline from the vault when you come out for the overseer, and then there's other quests that you can do. So they revamped the entire thing there. So I'm a level 105 now, and so I haven't been playing constantly for 5 years. I came back in chunks, right now because of this Fallout show, I was like, you know what, man, I want to go back into 76. They're doing a new map update where they're at the bottom of the map, the south part of the map. They're putting a whole new section in there. There's going to be more end game stuff, different bosses and stuff there. So that's coming in. They're like testing that out now. But the game is just, what I'm doing right now is that I do my dailies and weeklies. I go up through the scoreboard, get the, they changed their scoreboard, which I'm a little upset about. They used to have like a board game type of thing, but it was very linear. And now they changed it to the Helldivers Fortnite model, where you earn, you do challenges, and then you get the tickets. And then in these tickets, you get to choose which one you want to pick. But what I don't like about Fallout 76's model is that you have to go up levels, where in Helldivers, you just have to get war bonds and spend your war bonds to go over to the next page. You know what I mean? In this one, you can't move to the next page until you go up to like level 10 or level 14 or level 20. So you have to like grind your levels, then use the tickets. So it's a little different. I don't like the new method, but that's here nor there. You could do public events. You can do people can drop the nukes on different sections of the map, which gives different bosses and different things. So if you're looking to farm certain enemies or get different types of resources, it changes every single time they, you know, from when it's not nuked to when it is nuked. So that's something you can do. The end game is sort of like, when you look at people in the game that have been playing for years, they're like level 1,200, 2,200, 7,000. They've been playing for so long. And when you go to their camps, you see like all the stuff there. Now, you can earn the stuff and you can also pay for the stuff. Now, that's where it kind of gets a little, you know, pay to win-ish now, because now they've added guns and whatnot that people had to earn and grind for in different activities. Now you can just pay $10 and get that gun. So they don't really care about, you know, whose feelings are getting hurt there. It's just like, if you're enjoying the game, play the game. But there is if you're a person that likes Bethesda games, first off, if you like the storytelling, the lore building, there is a ton of quests to go on. They added Atlantic City. They added the Pit. These are expeditions that you can go on within in the world itself. They're adding, like I said, a new section of the map. So there's a lot of content here. So we talk about live service games all the time and how they all fail and how they're doing it wrong. But Fallout 76, as much as crap as people give it, it's still got a consistent player base, and it's here 5 years later. And they're actually doing a live service correctly. They just keep adding more content to this, sort of like what No Man's Sky is doing. The difference is No Man's Sky charges nothing, and these guys charge with all the Atom stuff that they keep putting in the Atom shop.
Okay, so with the end game and the content loop that you're playing, is there any aspect of, like, when those people get that high level, are they primarily just playing new content and then like establishing a settlement? Like, is there a point where you sort of get, like in some RPGs and stuff, you get so high level, you're now just sort of incrementally getting percentages? Like, what's it look like when you do get so significantly high? Like, how does that experience like meta progression? What are they sensing as far as you're doing your dailies and stuff and you're going in? Are you still leveling? Are you still getting skills and stuff?
Yeah, so they added a legendary card system a couple years back. So you have your regular specialty cards that you have, and then they put legendary cards in. So once you get up to a certain level, then you get these legendary cards, and these legendary cards, you take the cards that you don't want to use, and you can scrap those, and you get like a currency, and you can add those to your legendary cards. So your points in your specialty cards max out at 15. That's like the highest you can go at the base level. But if you keep leveling up the legendary cards and slot them into your thing, you can go all the way up to, like, I think 30, like double that. So you can get super powerful with this. So you'll see guys in the late game, enemies are always your level. So it doesn't matter what it is, right? It always constantly goes up. So if I'm fighting a guy, it's 105 for you, and you're a level 20, he's level 20 for you, I think, or within five or whatever it is.
Okay.
And then for me, he's 105. And you're still doing the percentages of damage based on what you're, you know, what your build is with your guns that you have to that character. So yeah, there's a constant leveling process for those people to get stuff. And then there's also different events, like a Halloween event and a Christmas event, and they bring these different events that come in that have certain plans that you can get dropped, or different weapons that only drop during like Halloween, or they only drop certain things. So people go and get those plans, and they grind for those things. And then if you want those plans, the person that has the plans can sell those plans to somebody else, and then you can make those things inside your house or your weapons and whatnot like that. So there's definitely a carrot in front of you to keep you coming back to try to get that next coolest plan or the next weapon or the next thing to put in your house.
Yeah, I remember we did a video about Fallout 76 in 2024. Like, they had seemingly pretty big plans that they're still coming out with, like you said, with the map expansion. What are your thoughts on the future of the game, given how long it's been out? You know, it released 6 years ago in 2018, and they're still adding to it now. How many more years do you think this game has?
I mean, I think they go as long as like Destiny's doing it, or as long as, you know, any other live service game that can do it. You know, if they have a consistent player base and they don't need millions and millions of people playing, they just need hundreds of thousands of people playing across all the consoles. So or all the platforms, I should say. So I think that they just keep it going. As like GTA is what, 11 years, 10 years, 11 years with the GTA Online. They're making money with Fallout First, right? People buy the Fallout First. They have benefits. Right now they're doing, chat, correct me if I'm wrong, those of you who play it longer than me. Right now there's a Fallout First. I don't know if it's just for Xbox, if it was for Game Pass, but they give Fallout First for free for a trial, right? So they give you this stash box, stash box, and these ammo stash box. So the biggest thing in these games like ESO or Fallout 76, which are both Bethesda games, if you get the subscription model for Elder Scrolls Online, you have unlimited stash, right? Like, you have unlimited backpack to put stuff in. In Fallout First, if you pay, I think it's like $13, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it's $12.99 a month. You can get the first month for like $6.50. And I do think it was free somehow. I don't know if they're still doing that, but they were
like
doing
it. It's like 1 week trial or whatever it is. But yeah, if you get the stash box, you get to keep it after your trial, which is fantastic because it lightens the load. Your stash box, you didn't even build a house, so you don't know, but your stash box only holds 1,200, which only held 300 at launch. It's at 1,200 now. That gets filled up really fast, really quick, okay? So the loop is always like, get stuff, break it down, build things, or repair things, or, you know what I mean? And then go back out in the field and do it again. Well, now they have more stash, and if you get this Fallout First stash box, it's unlimited. You can just keep putting stuff in. So if you get the trial, you can place it down in your base camp and you can put as much stuff as you in. But once the trial's over, you can pull stuff out, but you can't put stuff in it, right? So people are like, right now, I'm everything. If it's not glued down in the creation engine, I'm like grabbing it and like junking it and putting it in the box. But here's the thing. I thought about this. I was like, it's really simple to pull out something by accident, like a too big of a pile. Like, let's say you have 1,000 like silver or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. You pull it out. If your trial's over, you can't put that back in the box, and now you're overweight, and there's no way you can put it in your stash box because you're well overweight there as well, right? So you would have to just drop it on the ground or give it away or sell it or whatever, or pay $13 to get it back open so you can put it back into the Fallout First box, right? So
yeah, chat's saying that it's free on all platforms. It's a 3-day trial right now. And there's 4 days left to use it, somebody is saying. So yeah, it looks like you can get on all platforms. I mean, I know when they did this in ESO, it's such an interesting question because they get away with it when people are having a good time. Like, ESO as an audience felt like the subscription, you know, the Crown subscription, that they also got the stuff that you were talking about. They felt like they got so much value out of it. Nobody seemed to complain. But I also had people saying, like, yeah, if you're going to play The Elder Scrolls Online, you basically need the subscription. Like, they've kind of designed it to be that way. Do you feel that Fallout 76 is in a similar place? Like, without Fallout First, are you going to buck up against these limitations and really feel, I need it? I mean, $13 a month seems, I'll be honest, that seems kind of high for a video game subscription that's not an MMO. Like, people in chat were saying it's not an MMO. I mean, to me, it always looked like an MMO light style experience.
Well, you're not really paying for the MMO style. You're if you want to play, if you pay for Fallout First, you can literally make it a solo experience, right? Because it's the opposite. Fallout, the game itself is an MMO. It is. It's a light MMO. You can join a team, get XP, and everyone's always worried about, well, I want a Fallout game where I can play solo. I've can play the entire game without ever playing with anybody. Okay, like literally every single quest you can go on, you can play the entire game solo. You never have to play with anybody. But everyone's like, well, I don't want to come across anybody else in the map. And I'm like, all right, well, then go play Fallout 4. Go play Fallout 3. There are games. Go play Fallout New Vegas, right? There are games that are solo just only. But they try to want to force themselves to, well, I want to play this game, but this game is not what I want. And I want to make it what I want. Well, you can. Pay for Fallout first, $13 a month. You can pay a solo experience where nobody else is on the map and it's only you or your friends that you want to bring in. And if that's what people want to do, cool. I mean, MMOs people paid for decades. Mm-hmm. They paid a subscription, $12, $13, $15, $18 a month for this type of stuff. They're mm-hmm. doing everything basically an MMO did back in the day, minus the 1,000 people on a server, right? It's like 32 people, 16 people, whatever it is on the server.
I mean, I don't know if I agree with that. I do think there's a difference between World of Warcraft, where you're paying for access to a server. You're paying for access, right? And there's, yeah. like you're saying, it's this big open world. It's this big open space. And you need, you know, you're helping, basically, you're funding the server, essentially, is what you're paying for. And in this, in both ESO, my frustration with it is you make aspects of the game very limited, or even you would argue maybe unpleasant or frustrating, and then you monetize the fix. That's one where I kind of...
Oh, yeah. That's what I always say. Make the problem, sell the solution.
Yeah, I really recoil at that. It's like, well, you get people hooked. They like the game. They're having a good time. And then you're like, well, it would be a shame if all this stuff you're working on was incredibly cumbersome, tedious, or bottleneck. So... pay $13 a month and it won't feel that way. I'm not going to, you know, rip them to shreds for this. They offer something in the market, and if players are willing to pay for it, so be it. I don't think I'm a fan of that, though. I don't think I'd want to ever play a game where I felt my enjoyment of the game was intentionally sort of choked so that I'm like, okay, I'll pay money so you stop bottlenecking my experience.
I have 270 hours in the game, never, ever paid for Fallout First, never, ever paid for atoms in any way, shape, or form.
Okay.
All the atoms I've earned inside the actual game itself by doing challenges, scavenging, taking photos, building stuff, just playing the game. Like, playing the game, you get the atoms, and you can take those atoms. And like I said, it is like pay-to-win type of stuff inside the store. Like, for instance, there's an ammo converter, right?
Okay.
So you pick up ammo throughout the entire game, right? And maybe you're not using electric or energy build. Maybe you're not using cryo build. So you could take those and they convert it to like a 10 to 1 ratio. So if mm-hmm. you have 10 of those bullets, it'll turn it into one of the bullets that you want, or a stack that you want to use. So that's in the store. And if you want that, it's going to cost you $7, right? Or you can go kill 400 ghouls. And when you kill 400 ghouls, you get atoms, and you'll have enough atoms. You're going to kill ghouls. You're going on missions. You're going on different things. You're going to kill those things. So you will get atoms, and then you can take those atoms and then go to the store and then purchase that thing, right? So there is stuff in the game that is pay to win, or pay for convenience, I should say, right? Because that's what it is. It's more convenience. But as far as the storage stuff, yeah, there's people. I played Elder Scrolls Online. I've been playing that for 10 years. Never once got the subscription model to get the unlimited storage, right? I just play what I play, and that's how I play. But each their own.
Yeah, I mean, there's people in chat saying that, you know, you don't have to pay the money, but there's others saying, like, they've designed it so that you do that. And that's obviously a concern. We're seeing, you know, concern about live service games not being viable and aspects of live service games being sort of challenging. And I wonder if, you know, there are going to be companies that try this sort of thing where, well, yeah, you're having a great time and, you know, you're really leveled up now, but you're going to run out of space. You're going to run out of this, like creating those pain points that can then be monetized. In my estimation, though, I don't think a lot of games would get away with this. I think most games would not be... It wouldn't be a well-received thing that if suddenly you were saying, you know, in games like Destiny or The Division, hey, you can't really do any of this stuff, or these NPCs are limited, or your ability to store stuff's limited, but you can pay $10 a month and we'll give you all this. I think the reason ESO... got away with it initially, especially, is because it was the crown store primarily is what people were focused on. It's like, you're getting so many crowns to spend. Like the value, most of the people I've talked to with ESO is they just said the value was just so great that nobody really cared. And then it became like almost people felt like it was almost like necessary to play the game.
What, real quick, Fall First though, you're not just getting the storage. There's other benefits. You get like 1600 atoms. You get you get a bunch of other stuff in the in that service. It's not just for unlimited storage.
Yeah, somebody said in chat that you get a server when you pay for that. You get your own server.
So yeah, that's what I'm saying. So you can make your own server. You can play by yourself in that game, or you can have seven of your friends, so eight of you total on that server.
That I'm actually okay with. Like if a game says, hey, you can pay money for your own server and like do your own custom thing, that's it's pretty remarkable that you can go into games like, you know, Lego Fortnite and just create your own world and it's always there. You know, the fact that that's just like totally free. So like I'm okay with stuff like that being sort of additive. I don't like when the actual game experience or loop, the content loop, I don't like when that is in like almost like infringed upon in order for you to like pay to get out of that. So like for paying for servers and stuff, I think that's great when games offer that as an option, because a lot of the times people do, they just want their own thing. Then not every game is just going to give you that for free. You know, it's
right.
Fortnite's a bit of a Leviathan, and they can obviously do that knowing that you're going to buy some skins. You're going to, you know, you're going to buy some stuff in their V-Bucks store. So obviously one of the reasons that this game is suddenly hitting new player peaks on Steam and everyone's paying attention to it, and you know all this stuff's happening. They're all on sale. You know, they've got things marked way, way down. Like you can get Fallout 76 right now on Steam for $8. I bought it today on PlayStation for $8. I could have just downloaded it, by the way, through PS Plus. Like I didn't even have to pay for it, but I was like, I'm gonna pay for it just because I like having it. If they ever make significant changes, I can just come back. I was like, $8 is $8. But that's coinciding with the show. Now, have you managed to watch some or all of the show?
Watched all of it. Yeah.
Okay. Well, no spoilers. Chat, we're not going to get into spoilers because I'm only about halfway through. And I've got to say, as far as they're very different, but as far as accuracy to the brand and the lore and the feel and the vibe, this thing is like shoulder to shoulder with The Last of Us. Now, I think The Last of Us is a very different approach at storytelling, so I don't think you can compare them that much. But if we're asking the question, is the show checking all the boxes of just nailing the feel and the look and feeling as if it's respecting the source material, I feel like The Last of Us TV show and Fallout they're shoulder to shoulder. So what's your thought on it's been renewed for a second season. They announced that I think yesterday.
They should do 3 and 4 while they're at it.
Just knock them out, right? What's your general opinion of the show score? You know, where do you rank it? We've got other shows that didn't get great treatment like Halo, but then, you know, The Last of Us got awards and it was critically acclaimed, and Fallout seems to be headed in a similar direction.
Yeah, I love the show. I thought it keeping, you know, close to what the games are, right? And this is Bethesda's Fallout, so I know a lot of people look at, you know, well, there might be lore breaking and stuff, but they're not. If you just let the story, let it play out, watch the story, you know, and if you are a person that doesn't know anything about Fallout, I think the setting of what Fallout is, just the nature of Fallout, I think is very interesting. Like, I like the setting of Fallout more than The Last of Us. Both worlds at the end, you know what I mean? Both on a type of, the world is different, a much different place than we know. But I really like I love the actors they've picked. My least favorite is Maximus out of the group. But at the same time, you know, you always have to have your least favorite because there's other people that are better than the others, right? So I loved the ghoul.
Yeah, we'll get to the ghoul in a second. Why don't you like Maximus? What about him don't you like?
I don't know. It's just it's not more of his character. It's more of the actor playing the character. To me, he comes off. I don't know. I don't know anything about the actor himself. It feels like this is one of his first roles. It doesn't seem like he's well rounded. His acting range is a little limited in the role that he's playing, right? I like the story of Maximus and how he's trying to become part of the Brotherhood of Steel, but in his own way, where, you know, fake it till you make it type of thing. But to me, he's the weakest link of the three main, of Lucy, the ghoul, and Maximus.
Okay, because yeah, I want to get to the other characters that you like. My only pushback on Maximus is I feel like, because I don't want to get into spoilers, but I do feel like in shows like this, they're having to embody somebody that is like almost childlike at some level. Like they don't know things. They're super naive and ignorant about certain aspects. And so I feel like that's a challenge to do with a character, you know. Well, I feel like he's done a fine job, but I do wonder if like the script they gave him and like the position that the character's in and the things he has to say sometimes, I'm like, yeah, he kind of just seems almost like a child at times. And I wonder if that's more to blame than the actor. I don't feel like the actor's doing like a bad job. I just feel like the character itself is sort of a, yeah, like a straight man, like a square. Well, like he's kind of the nerd.
Right. Well, unfortunately, because he's an actor and there's other actors in the show, the other actors are out, you know, out acting him. Right. And that's why he looks not as good as the rest of the characters. You know what I'm saying? Like Lucy, as her role, she's just a much better actress in that role than he is in his role. And it comes off.
Yeah, I'll grant you that, because she is like the doe-eyed kind of dumb, just super naive, and she plays it perfectly. She's fantastic. Right. Like she embodies the experience of the game. Like you're in this like, oh, everything's great. Well, and you go outside and you're like, oh my gosh, it's terrible out here. She's fantastic. Like the casting in the show, I think, is part of the reason it's just been received so well. Like I think everybody's nailing their part to a very high degree. I think that's always needed in a show like this. Like you need a very good cast,
right,
to bring that to the screen.
I also think that each of the characters, though, is almost like if you made a character in game, like that's the class they picked, right? Like she's a vault dweller. She went through levels 1 through 20, right? She did something that you just skipped, right? You're like the Maximus character in your Fallout 76 run because you didn't know anything. You kind of just went out into the world and yeah, you want the power armor suit, right? You know what I mean?
That's right.
Like that's what it feels like. It feels like Maximus is a character that's like a level 5.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
And Lucy is like a level 20, and the ghoul is like in Endgame. You know what I mean? Like that's what it feels like between these three characters.
Well, yeah, Eugene saying it, he's a character with zero intelligence and all luck. Like, right? Like he's exactly right. He lucks into
that's
everything.
Exactly right.
I like that aspect of the show, though, is that there's like little hints of it being almost like a video game, right? Like the stuff happens and the stuff that they find. Her armor at one point when she comes out and she's got like the t-shirt, but she's got like just a little bit of armor. I'm like, that's exactly like it is in the game. Like you get like just a little bit of armor in the beginning, you know, and it's rough out here. You know, there's bugs the size of dogs out here. So I just hope they find a way, no spoilers, but I just hope they find a way. Michael Emerson was only in it for 2 episodes, and I love him. Benjamin Linus from Lost, he played Harold Finch in Person of Interest. I love Michael Emerson. He's also in Evil, and my wife and I think he's great. So I thought he brought exactly the tone of that world, just that the guy that's sort of foreboding and intelligent, and you don't really understand, you know, why he's being so ominous, and yet he looks so, you know, just normal and nerdy. I love what he brought to the show as well. So the ghoul, I want to talk a bit about that as well. They have absolutely perfected that look. Like I was playing the game today and I was like, that's, yep, it's so good. And when they run into another one, no spoilers, but there is another ghoul that they have an interaction with. And I loved how I'm not super into Fallout lore, so I don't know if that was artistic liberty with how they sort of established how a ghoul could be able to talk in normal and then others that are not. Like, I don't know if that's from the games.
Yeah, it is. Yep.
Because I played Fallout 4. That was my first Fallout ever. And I loved it, but I didn't get into the lore and the backstory. But I loved what they did with his character and how they're developing his backstory too as a character. It's just great.
Yeah, I absolutely love it. And here's my biggest complaint about Fallout the show is that I wish they went week by week. I don't want to sit and binge watch. I mean, I do because you have to, because if everyone's watching it and you don't watch it, you go on Twitter, you go on social media, you go into chat, someone's going to spoil something for you. So if you do yourself a favor by sitting down and watching it all. But man, I think Bethesda, I think Amazon, and I think would have all benefited better. Like right now, the show is at its all time. I don't want to compare it to a Game of Thrones because Game of Thrones was phenomenal, right? This is not phenomenal yet. This is just, it's good, right? It's good. But Game of Thrones is week by week. Everyone had like parties and come to the house. We all sat down, you watched the thing, you all talked about it, all the thing, and it lasted for months, right? Yeah. Where this, it's like, boom, one day, one weekend. And I think they could have benefited. I think that Fallout 76 and Fallout 4 and all these other things could have benefited for a more longevity, because right now it's like a hot skillet. Everyone's going back and playing Fallout 76. Everyone's going back to play Fallout 4 and 3 and 1 and 2, Vegas. But that's going to be short-lived because the show, people are going to watch it, and then it's done. And then it'll go off until you hear a hoopla of Season 2 is coming out, you know, 2025 or whatever it is. And I feel like they missed the ball here.
I always agree with this take because this has been debated on Twitter between a couple of people. I saw them like teasing each other about, you know, one is in favor of the week to week, the other's in favor of the binge. Eugene and I have gone back and forth on this. He's even saying if they would have gone week to week, he would have checked out. And I'm like, I absolutely don't get that. I cannot mentally get to a place.
You can binge watch it at the end. You know what I mean? You can wait till the end and binge watch it.
Right. Like, if I don't binge watch, I risk spoilers, and that's on me. I'm supposed to uproot my life and basically be like, well, don't get on social media and carve out 9 hours to just plow through this, or you're risking spoilers. Like, that's ridiculous. And then at worst, you, if you'd rather binge, you have to wait until the end and then binge, and then you have to avoid spoilers. But it's a lot easier for you to just watch it every week. It's not that that's a lot easier than being like, right, if you don't want spoilers, we're so integrated with social and with tech, I'm supposed to disconnect from that until I carve out in my busy schedule 8 hours to binge watch a show. I agree with you that week to week creates a communal aspect. People Absolutely. Are theorizing. They're getting on Reddit and Twitter. They're tracking the Easter eggs. Oh, I didn't see that. They go back and they rewatch an episode. It creates a water cooler moment Absolutely. In the digital world. And I think we're just absolutely missing out on that when we let people binge. If the people that are going to be like, well, I'm not going to watch it if I can't binge, bull. If the show is good and has good reviews, there's almost none of you that are going to be able to hold out and not watch when a show's getting this much right. praise week to week.
Yeah, I just feel like they chop the legs out from the kneecap down for this, because if it went week by week, then Fallout 76 would be getting talked about more. Fallout 4, when it comes out next week, April 25th or 26th, when it comes out for the update, whatever they're doing, right? That would be talked more about if every week there was another episode coming out. And I'm obviously, I get like people that want to watch it. I'm talking from a business standpoint, right?
Sure,
the business,
sure.
The company itself cut their own knees out from underneath them doing this. And maybe it's because they weren't convinced that their show was going to do good. I don't know. But you would think I always say, make a game, sell a game, right? Make a movie, you know, sell that movie. Write a book, sell that book. Like, be confident in what you're making and put it out there. And if it's good, it's good. If you think it's good and people start watching it, it's good, then that's what it is. But a lot of these people are like, I don't know. We need that watch time. We need that million watch time. And then it'll be a nice header. You know, million people watched the game, or 10 million people, or 10 million hours watched of Fallout. But that in the short run is nice. But in the long run, they could have made more money through Amazon Prime. They could have made more money with, you know, keeping this going. And I hate that. I hate it, especially working in the industry. I hated working on something and then just dumping it on best back in the day. Mm-hmm. Worked on a series and then they just dump it on DVD. It's like straight to DVD type of thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
instead of a weekly episodic thing.
I am surprised that they didn't... The Last of Us, there was like a spike in sales every time an episode aired.
Yeah.
And it's like, didn't y'all look at that and think...
Witcher?
Witcher? That the same thing could have happened with Fallout? Like, every week, people would have been like, yo, the show is getting pretty crazy. And then it would have boosted sales again. It gets on everybody's radar again. I am shocked that they did this because now... The expectation is, well, season two will be the same way, and it's like, well, you've missed the mark. Now you can't walk this back.
Yeah. You have to binge watch it now. Yeah, you've set the standard.
Somebody says the actor who plays the ghoul purposely didn't play the game so he could be an advocate for the audience that has no experience with Fallout. Yeah, but then I think the main actress she actually went and played all of them, which I think was the right choice. I think her being familiar with the source material is probably more important than the ghoul because she has to embody almost the player's experience of Fallout. Yeah. Like, I really loved that she did that. I like her a lot. I hope this gets her into more stuff. I think she's fabulous. She's got a great look too. Like, I think you could do a lot of things with like sort of her vibe. Yeah. You could make her a killer. You could make her, you know, America's sweetheart. I think she's got a very versatile approach to a lot of different roles.
What I like about what they did in the show and what I like about Fallout 76 is that when they're together, right, it's that companion type of feel. Mm-hmm. Right. And then also in Fallout 76, my biggest letdown for Fallout 3 and Fallout 4, I would always play the game, and I'd play it the exact same time my brother would play it. And we would play together, but you're playing separate, right? You're playing separately, but together. Like, you're on the headsets, you're talking to each other, like, oh, man, I'm in D.C. And you're like, oh, cool, and you're exploring together, but you're not in the same world. Like, different instance, right? That's basically what it is. And what I love about Fallout 76 is that you can play with a buddy and just go on these missions together. And then even in the show... They're companions, but they're going on missions together. And I feel like that's another selling point that they've tried to push towards. Obviously, they didn't make this show just to make the show. They made the show to sell the series, right? To sell the games, to sell the stuff. That's why they make TV shows like this, to get more interest in the video games and vice versa.
But don't you think the timing is weird then that they did this? And I love that they did it. I think it's masterful, but... Don't you think it's weird they don't... There's not going to be a new Fallout game for like 8 or 9 years, you know?
Yeah.
How many seasons are they going to do?
Well, if they were smart, they would do seasons leading up to the next Fallout game, right? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, for sure, but that's a big... In the realm of television, that's a pretty big commitment to say, you know, if you're doing one season... Well, I guess it depends on the rhythm. If they do a season in production and all of that, and they have to come out every other year, then, you know, 8 or 9 years from now, they could be only on their fifth season. That's not as hard to commit to. I was thinking a season a year, but that's like 8 or 9 seasons. That's a lot of content.
I hate the way they do content now, where they skip a year or 2 years and then put the next season. I hate that. Like, just... make a season every year. Come on, what are you doing? Like, what are you doing? Just do the season and film multiple, at least film them multiple back to back or something, and then air them, put them out year after year. Mando, when Mando came out, there was no Star Wars out at that time, right? Mm-hmm. But all of a sudden, people started watching Mando, and all of a sudden, people started playing Star Wars games again. Doesn't matter which Star Wars it was. They're just like, yeah, I'm gonna go back and play a Star Wars game, because that is what you're supposed to do. It gets you hyped to go play a Star Wars game, or leading up, like right now, the Transformers 1 animated show movie's coming out. Mm-hmm. They better drop Transformers Reactivate this year, because the animated movie's coming out. Regardless if it's connected or not, it's a Transformers movie. You better drop that game this year to get people hyped for it.
Yeah, I mean, there's different theories in chat. They're like, they did this to promote Fallout 76 and the upcoming expansion. I mean, that's a pretty expensive endeavor to promote a game that I would imagine, no shade to Fallout 76, it's not a huge moneymaker for them right now. It's probably, you know, maintaining itself, but I don't think that game, even looking at the player base numbers where they're hitting on Steam, I don't think that is the main focus. I think that this is tied to a greater attempt to say we can promote video games and media and the brand or the franchise in more ways, because, you know, with the success of The Last of Us, in the absolute bummer I'm seeing echoed by Halo fans is, man, you guys just could have made Halo so much better. Like, what a missed opportunity given how great Fallout is. Like, I saw a lot of people bemoaning that. Like, I'm not a huge Halo fan, so I wasn't really heartbroken. I didn't even watch the show. I just, you know, I heard season one was terrible, and I just stayed away. But this, the first time I saw a trailer for this, I was like, yo, that actually looks like they nailed it. It looks like they captivated
right.
Fallout. And the next game in line is Elder Scrolls. So, you know, again, I find the timing to be a little bit weird, but the good news is, you know, they're already renewed for a second season. I don't know what the turnaround time will be on that, but the hope would be that this show can, you know, can run its course, and maybe they end with a big crescendo movie or something, and then, you know, Fallout 5 is ready to come. Because
sure.
I when I'm playing Fallout today and I'm looking at the UI, and I'm looking at what they could do. Like, the game just has a vibe. What they could do with the modern, next-gen, just all the way polished up, big, huge Fallout could be absolutely incredible. It really could. I think that I would like that more. I mean, Starfield, in essence, was almost like a Fallout 5. It was very, very much at its core,
sure.
The internal workings. It was Fallout. It was just in outer space.
Maybe they're connected. Maybe that's why we're in space now, because...
I mean, I have my own theory as to that was what the birth of Starfield was that, okay, let's leave the vaults behind. It got so bad they had to leave the Earth, and then they were like, well, that won't feel like Fallout, so they decided to name it Starfield.
Right.
Like, if there was ever a documentary on Starfield, that wouldn't surprise me at all if, like, that was sort of the thought birth of, let's go to outer space, because... And the reason you wouldn't call it Fallout is it wouldn't have that vibe anymore of the seedy, just destroyed world and vaults to
right.
go in and the Pip-Boy. I think that'd be hard to sell in, like, a futuristic outer space RPG. And so, you know, so on that token, there's this update coming to Fallout 4.
Mm-hmm.
Is that going to pull you away from 76? Like, do you see yourself maybe checking this out, this update that they're pushing out?
Yeah, I would like to see it on the next gen console and with the updates that they've done. I'm definitely going to check back in. I don't know if I'm going to play it, because, like I said, the best thing for me about Fallout 76 is that I can play with buds. And where Fallout 4, great game, but it's a single player game, and I'm kind of like, sort of like, you're past the dialogue and you don't want to play that type of game anymore. I'm
mm-hmm.
kind of done playing Fallout by myself. I really like Fallout 76, where I can play with friends.
Yeah, and I mean, they posted a blog. They said Fallout 4 upgrades are coming to next-gen consoles,
mm-hmm.
so they're going to release a free Fallout 4 update for download on the Series X and S and the PlayStation 5. It includes native applications for the PS5 and the Series X and S, performance mode and quality mode settings, as well as stability improvements and fixes, experience up to 60 FPS, and increased resolutions. Now, updates for PC players are going to be a little bit, you know, slightly different here. They're going to have widescreen and ultra-widescreen support, fixes to the creation kit. The players with PC versions of Fallout 4 on Steam, Microsoft Store, and GOG will receive stability mods and bugs fixes. So, it says here, alongside with this exciting update, Fallout 4 will be available for purchase in the Epic Games Store and will also be Steam Deck verified. Now, there's even more content, though. And this is so interesting.
Yeah.
This is very interesting to me that they're doing this. They're doing the show and they're going to add all this. So, they have even more content coming, it says, including the following free Creation Club items. So, Enclave Remnants, like skins,
mm-hmm.
a weapon armor. There's going to be a weapon pack, a Halloween workshop. This is interesting to me. It's almost as if some of these RPGs are being looked at as like a live service game, but not. Like, we can add stuff and update stuff and sell stuff, but it's not an ongoing game. Do you see what I'm saying?
Right.
Do you think that's going to be more common?
Well, I think they... Obviously, people already own the game. And they're like, well, it's been out for so long. Why don't we mm-hmm. update it to get people to come back and play? I mean, because that's the end goal, right? To make a purchase. And if you're not making a purchase because you already own the game, then they want you to maybe get something from the creation engine, right? Or creation shop, right? Or just come back in, because your time is what they want. Because if your time is in there playing their game, and this goes for any game out there, if your time is in their game, then you're not playing another game. So there's that small chance that you're going to spend a microtransaction or something along the lines to get you to come back into their ecosystem. right? So I'm excited. You know what I'm excited for? Have you ever looked up the Fallout London mod for Fallout 4?
That apparently has delayed because they're like, well, this all this stuff that Bethesda's going to do might break what we're doing.
Correct. It's a mod that was by 200 fans that love Fallout so much. They made this. It's amazing looking. It's bigger than basically Fallout 4 by itself. Okay.
Wow.
And Fallout 4, because all of a sudden they're pushing it out, because this was supposed to come out last year, but they pushed it to this year. Why? Because of the Fallout TV show, right? So they have every right to do that. And because these modders were supposed to drop theirs on the 23rd, I think, because based in the game of St. George Day, it happens on April 23rd, so they wanted to release it at the exact same time. But now they have to wait, because now Bethesda's going to drop it in, and they go, oh, this is going to break everything that we worked on. So we don't know how long it's going to take. So they made an indefinite like delay, because they just have to wait to see what it's going to break. The whole thing about this, though, is I will be excited to jump into that more than Fallout 4, because I already played Fallout 4, right? And I haven't played Fallout London, right? So I would dive in head first to Fallout London to get that more lore and more stuff into that game than I would to go back and play Fallout 4.
Yeah. I tend to agree with you that they're throwing stuff like in here just to kind of see how consumers will respond. People in chat are kind of echoing that, like Derek saying, you know, the answer is, will this create sales? Will this create people, you know, spending money? And I wonder, I'm actually quite interested in what this game's going to look like, because I remember Fallout 4. It's so funny how you remember games. I remember loving it and thinking it was great. And now I look back and I'm like, man, that game looks kind of rough. Like, it's so interesting how fast your expectations and what you want to see from a game can change over time. And you're not consciously doing that. It's just, you know, you start playing, you know, better looking games, and it's, you know, hard to look back on those. But I'm interested, like, what's this new resolution and frame rate going to look like? Because I always thought Fallout 4 was great. Everybody was said, oh, it was a glitchy, buggy mess, and it was this and that and the third. And I was like, I remember streaming it and playing it. It was one of the first games I streamed at length when I broke away from Borderlands. And I absolutely loved it. I thought that it scratched that Borderlands itch. There was all these weapons, and there was so many different things you could do, and, you know, different companions you could bring with you. And I think sometimes this happens where if you've not been exposed to a Bethesda game before, I feel like your first sort of lengthy endeavor, like I remember the first time I played Skyrim, I thought the same thing. I thought, this is incredible. And then Fallout was so different, I thought the same thing. I was like, well, this is incredible. Well, I had never played any of the previous Elder Scrolls games. I had never played any of the previous Fallout games. And I feel like that's what happened for a lot of people with Starfield. They're like, this is revolutionary. This is amazing. And it's like, yeah, I mean, I experienced a lot of this in Fallout 4. How do they outdo that in the next game? Do you think that's even possible? Like, make a Fallout 5 and not have it be just more Fallout, if that makes sense. Like, because for me, that's such a hard line to straddle, because people are going to want it to feel and look like Fallout and sort of be familiar, but also you got to sort of not reinvent the wheel, but you've got to up the ante a little bit and really evolve your game.
Well, you're talking about graphic wise and what, but people don't really play the Fallout games for graphic intensity, right? They play it for the rich lore that's in the game. So what makes a Fallout game is the different locations and the lore and the story behind that location of like what happened, why did it get to this point, right? So there's a lot of moments inside the game. Division and Division 2 do this, right? Like, you walk into a location and it looks so beautiful. Like, the level design in Division is just amazing looking, right? Can you imagine a Fallout game looking like what Division does? You know what I mean? Like, that's for what you're talking about, right? Mm-hmm. But it tells the story. Like, the landscape of what you're shooting a gun in, with the trash bags is tall, with body bags everywhere. You see a skeleton in, like, one chair, you know, holding a beer. Like, what's the story behind that guy? Like, what happened to him, right? That's what Fallout is, right?
It's
that world building of what's going on, or they'll put like a teddy bear. And I know this means nothing to a lot of people that are playing these games, but they'll put like a teddy bear in a lawn chair. You're like, well, who did that? Did a raider come by and did this? Like, what's the scenario that happened in this section of the of this town, in DC, in Pittsburgh, in Atlantic City, in New Vegas? So I think if they make a Fallout 5 game, if they graphically, I guess they would have to, if they keep the creation engine, obviously I think they would have to, or make another engine do what the creation engine can do, they would have to put it in a new location, right? They would have to put it in a new location, or maybe an existing location that they go back to, like what Grand Theft Auto is doing with going back to Miami. Maybe they go back to New Vegas, right? And maybe they go back to that, but updated graphics. Maybe they just remaster, Vegas, Fallout Vegas to, you know, get you interested in it again. I don't know. But I think that to make a Fallout game is just about the rich lore within the Fallout story. It's not about the graphics and the mechanics. Obviously, that's a bonus on top of that. But the people play the games because of what the lore building is in the world.
I mean, I wasn't just thinking about the graphics. I was also thinking one of the reasons I was so critical of Starfield is so many of the systems were just wholesale lifted from Fallout. It was like, this isn't really anything new or revolutionary.
And new mechanics, that's what I'm saying,
Right. I think the graphics are, to me, becoming less important than art style and performance. Like, if you nail the art style, like No Rest for the Wicked is a great example of just really dope art style. But then performance, it's got to run well. And I think for everything you just described, the thing they're going to want to avoid with the next Elder Scrolls and a Fallout 5 is they're going to want to avoid that idea of like, well, bigger is better, and they rely less on handcrafted environments. Because I think what you're describing is what so many people didn't want to see in Starfield was, well, where's all the handcrafted stuff? You're talking about coming upon a location that somebody, what somebody in chat said, took time to do environmental storytelling where you can kind of piece together what has happened, which is a really great and subtle way of establishing a tone and a vibe and a feel that's very memorable. And so I don't necessarily, because people are like, you know, you said, imagine looking like the Division, you know, someone in our members only Discord is saying, you know, imagine Fallout in the Decima engine, you know, the engine used for Death Stranding and Horizon. Like, oh my word, that'd be incredible. But you've got to bring those handcrafted environments, and I really think art style is huge, especially for Fallout. As soon as all the UI starts popping up, as soon as I'm in a vault, I was like, this is why the show is so good. It just creates that feel. And even today when I booted up Fallout 76, I think my favorite part was just at that beginning, just walking around and seeing the posters and, you know, talking to the robots and picking stuff up. They've got to nail that. Like, I don't necessarily want them to abandon that for, you know, photorealism or, oh, well, the world is so much bigger. Well, if it's not handcrafted and if it doesn't have that feel, I think that's going to be a pretty significant mistake. And this is not just a lesson for Bethesda. I think games in general need to think about that, that the more memorable experiences we've had are not these procedurally generated enormous environments. It's no, it left an impact on me, you know, the art style or the storytelling itself.
Real quick, in chat, Chris F. says the last thing that Bethesda Game Studios wants is to touch New Vegas. Well, you got to remember, when that was out last time, they were two separate studios that worked, you know, worked on the project. But now they're all under one umbrella, right? They're all under Microsoft. So if Obsidian wanted to make a next Fallout New Vegas, either remaster or the next rendition of it, they can, because they're all under the same umbrella now. So it doesn't really matter what Bethesda wants, because Microsoft is pays both their salaries.
This is true. This is true. Well, I mean, in this realm, you know, there's Fallout 76, there's Fallout 4, there's a TV show. I think it's great to see a
Fallout Shelter. You forgot about Fallout Shelter.
Fallout Shelter. Yeah, I can't. I get
the most popular Fallout game that they've ever created.
Oh, I know. And what's funny is that I remember when they announced that, nobody cared. Not, and I don't mean nobody cared, like they weren't interested in playing. It didn't upset people is what I mean. Like, you would
think
you would think, like, people would be angry. Like, I can't believe you're doing this. It was like, nobody got upset. Nobody cared that they did this. They were like, what? A Fallout game on my phone? Like, it was really, that was an interesting thing to me that was celebrated and then was so popular, because that's got to be a pretty big risk when you take your famous property and you put it on a mobile phone. you can really tick your fans off by doing that. And, you know, it's been a roaring success.
9 years, almost 10 years it's been out.
Really? I remember when that got announced.
It came out right before Fallout 4. It came out in 2015.
Wow.
It launched at E3. Todd Howard came on stage and said, "This is our mobile game and you can play it right now." Right? And to this day, when I streamed on Twitch, okay, I've never had this many people watch me play a game before, ever. I had 1,600 people watch me play Fallout Shelter. 1,600 on Twitch.
Why aren't you a full-time Fallout Shelter streamer? What happened? You know?
I was playing it on my iPad that I hooked up a cable into my capture card, and everyone was like, "Oh, wow, what is this?" Because it wasn't on console. It wasn't on anything. It was just on mobile.
Right, and most people didn't know how to capture an iPad or an iPhone. You had to have that adapter, the HDMI adapter.
Yeah.
I remember I did that for like a Marvel game, and I was like, This is it was more common when I did it at that point. A lot of people had done that, but yeah, you really could have made a name for yourself, you know, being a Fallout Shelter streamer.
Yeah, Fallout Shelter streamer. Yeah.
Are they still doing updates to that game? Are they still adding stuff to it?
Yeah. Yeah. They literally just added the characters from the show.
Yeah, no, I saw that. I mean like a substantive update. Like are they adding
it's been updated constantly for 9 years.
That's awesome. I mean, I'm looking at people I want to go to YouTube. I want to see where this is landing. So Fallout Shelter. All right, let's look at some of the latest videos about this. This guy 17 hours ago uploaded he's uploading the TV show update, and it's got a couple thousand views there. I was looking if any of the big boys 10 days ago, every vault in the Fallout series explained, 4 million views. Like it's so interesting. It's crazy how long-standing this game is. Like this guy here I'm not saying that this to besmirch him, but it's a small channel. He has got 3,000 subscribers, which is why this is so impressive. He has a Fallout Shelter 5 Tips for Beginners video, almost 100,000 views. You know, he's got 3,000 subs and he's got 100,000 view video.
Holistic mobile game, right? Yeah, which is on console. It's on all systems now, so.
Yeah, I love it. I love that kind of thing can happen. And one of the reasons I think Fallout Shelter is so visually appealing is it's just the art of Fallout. Like, I've always loved the little guys and the little, you know, you go to your skill tree and the little animations. And when you level up, there's just a charm to that that I've always appreciated.
Would you play a Fallout game with the graphics of Fallout Shelter? Like, just take, maybe someone's done it. I don't even know. Maybe if they take a mod and made the art style of exactly what the, you know, the bobblehead guys look like inside the Fallout Shelter. Would you play that?
Like as a the shooter RPG that they have set up?
Yes, it's exactly the same, only the graphics look like Fallout Shelter.
I think I think the problem with that is the reason Fallout worked in the past is it had this
gritty,
dirty, everything's terrible feel and vibe. Like I remember the first time I went into a house. You come out of the vault in Fallout 4. I go into a house, and it has this wonderful juxtaposition of like.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Like old, really cool TVs and furniture, and everything is a mess. I loved that. It was such a great... And then the bugs that were in the vault, these big cockroaches. That, to me, was just such a great way to set the tone and story. I think that's hard to do...
With a cartoon feel.
And people would be like, oh, this is just, and this would be incorrect, but people would say, oh, they're just copying Borderlands is what people would say. I also think another great juxtaposition, this is a word I use a lot with Fallout, because they create this charm, and there's art, and there's the old-timey music, and then there's the vaults. They're kind of pristine, and everything's metallic and clean. But then everything else is horrible and grotesque and macabre and, you know, destroyed. I love that. I think I thought they nailed that so well in Fallout 4, that feel of man, that you almost feel this sense of melancholy about the world, like what has been destroyed. You sense right. it more when you have yep. that sharp juxtaposition. So I don't know about the cartoon style. I would love like a side scroller shooter, maybe, with the characters, you know, like or you know, like a shoot 'em up, because you're running along and you know getting your guns, and
you want like an Ori type of game for for Fallout.
Yeah. I don't think like a Metroidvania. I don't think that, but I would love, you know, those the
Contra.
Like, yeah, more like a Contra, but you're getting the weapons and you're leveling up, and your character can get stronger.
Interesting.
Get armor. It could be fun. It really could, you know, because you could put that everywhere. You know, that could run on a Nintendo.
Could you imagine right now, before Fallout 5 comes out, they're like, Todd Howard gets on stage, maybe this summer or next summer, he goes, all right, the next game in the Fallout series, he stands on with 16 times the detail, Fallout Shelter 2. And everyone's like, oh, for God's sakes, Todd.
I honestly, I don't know, though. I think if he played it up and hammed it up, people would think that, I think people would think that's funny and they would enjoy it. But I do think that there are long-standing Bethesda fans. You know, the Bethesdians were none too happy with Starfield. The modders moved on.
Yeah,
you know,
they wanted that Fallout 5. They wanted Fallout 5 instead of Starfield is what they wanted.
Right, or Elder Scrolls. It's like, give us one. Give us one of those. And I wonder if we're seeing that. We saw that with Gearbox. You know, Randy Pitchford did not want to be the Borderlands developer, so they did Battleborn. And that, I think, ended up hurting Borderlands 3. And I do sometimes think these developers get that in their head of, well, we don't want to be, that's not the only thing we want to be known for. That's not the only thing we want to do. Because it makes sense, right? They're creatives, they're artistic, so they're naturally going to want to do something else. Like, you know, Bungie didn't want to do Halo anymore, and then they want to do Destiny. It's like, well, I said this the other day. Right. It's like, do they want to do Destiny for another 10 years? Because we're hearing rumors about Destiny 3. So I do think that's normal for a developer to say, well, we want to try something completely new and different. And I think that's essentially what they were trying to do with Starfield. And gamers tend to talk out of both sides of their mouth. They're like, it's just another sequel, just another this, and we want something new. And then, you know, companies try to do something new. It tends to not go over well because it's risky, you know?
Right.
Brand loyalty and brand awareness is a huge aspect sometimes of a game is successful or not, because people recognize it and they're like, oh, I want to play the next fill in the blank.
Do you think, because of the landscape of video games the way it is, where they're all looking for that live service game, and Fallout 76 is that live service game, do you think that the next Fallout 5 is more of a live service game? And when I say this, I mean like more like a Grand Theft Auto 5 than a straight up live service game, where the single player game for Fallout 5 is there. You can play that single player game, but then the add-on for the online, maybe it's not Fallout 76, because this is a prequel, right? 76 is a prequel to all the other games. Do you think Fallout 5 has that online game mode to keep that going for the future? Or same with either Elder Scrolls 6, right? Do they make a single player large game and then add that live service element to the tail end of it?
I would say that'd be a pretty significant mistake if they tried to make Fallout 5 live service. I think that would be largely rejected by the fans. It was like, this is not what...
Even if they get that single player game on top of it.
Well, what I was going to say is, what if what they're doing right now in Fallout 4 is a bit of an experiment? I've continued to say that I believe Assassin's Creed Valhalla has disrupted the industry very subtly and underneath the surface. It's not visible right now, but I've continued to say
adding to it.
Valhalla changed things, because now people are saying, we build these huge massive worlds and it takes a really long time. Why would we abandon that? Why would we do more in there? So maybe this update to Fallout 4 is a bit of an experiment to say, how would players react to an Elder Scrolls or a Fallout 5 that's not live service? We're not going to battle pass it up and event it up. We're going to be adding content episodically, rhythmically, I've continued to say that the future of live service games is to get away from player funnel model and get to a content focus model, because really what they're looking for is ongoing monetization to subsidize and support the studio as well as the next project. I think you're way more likely to have success if you stop obsessing over player funnel model and go to content focus model. And Fallout 5, Elder Scrolls 6, these are games that could do that, and then it wouldn't be like a traditional live service game. I would say that's an ongoing game. Like, they're just going to keep adding to the world and to the experience without that sense of, if we lose players, if the player funnel dries up, then our game is done, right? Like, if Helldivers player funnel dries up, it's done. Like, what are you going to do? You need players for Helldivers to work.
Right.
I keep thinking that that's the next iteration and evolution of the ongoing game that can be successful, because it's a symbiotic relationship between the consumer and the developer. And I just don't think the funnel model is sustainable. There's only so many hours in a day, and there's only so many players, and so many of them are already playing nothing but Fortnite and Call of Duty.
Yeah, that stat that came out, 2 weeks ago, about six games are dominating the entire industry. Yeah, I look at it. I think if you look at what Bethesda is doing right now, what do they have? I mean, they're adding to Fallout 4. They have Fallout 76, and Starfield's a single player game, right? Yeah, they have the Shattered Space. Is that what it's called?
Yeah,
coming out later this year. But what do they got? Elder Scrolls 6 is not coming out anytime soon. Fallout 5 is not coming out anytime soon. So I still stand by what I've said for months and almost over years now, where I think Starfield's going to have that online component added to it after the fact, as that, because then they cover, right? They have their fantasy, they have their sci-fi, and then they have their post-apocalyptic. Fallout 76 is that ongoing game for Fallout fans. You got Elder Scrolls Online for the fantasy fans, and then you have Starfield. If they add a live service element to the back end of that, like sort of like a Grand Theft Auto Online or Red Dead Redemption Online did. That's your sci-fi fans, and they got it covered until the next rendition of those things come out.
Well, somebody in chat is saying, this should be a wake-up call to directors. Gonk is saying, game companies have shows and movies that if the video game show or movie is good, people will play their games again. The era of video game shows has begun. So I saw this question posed a bunch on Twitter. I'm going to pose it to you. If you picked a franchise that got turned into a TV show, what are you picking? I actually struggle to answer this because I would have said Ghost of Tsushima, but that's becoming a movie, so I'm kind of already getting that.
I would take a Gears of War series.
I
would take a Gears of War series. I could see a Starfield series where they go on adventures or whatever like that. I could see a Starfield series. I think they're working on a God of War series, aren't they? I could see a God of War series as well.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things they could do.
There's rumors I think they're doing something with Horizon Zero Dawn as well, I believe.
And all they got to do, stick to the source material. It's already there. Like, it's set for you. Because you got to remember, we as gamers know what the story is, but the television group doesn't know anything about those things. So if you do stay close to the source material and just... You could tell different stories, just stay close to what the world building is for those games. I think there's a ton of games that you can do. Hell, I'll take a Metroid. I'll take an animated Metroid series, right? I'll take that.
Yeah.
They've done Castlevania and stuff like that. They've done a really good job with some of these adaptations of games.
I think one of the easiest ones to do that would be, it could be killer, and maybe even get like someone like Kevin Costner involved, is Red Dead Redemption. Because so easy to nail great cowboy western. Oh my word, they could nail it. And if you get like Kevin Costner involved, like he has a lot of experience doing westerns, I think he's a great director. That could be just a killer show. And I think with the way that they've told both the stories of the games, how hard would it be to be faithful to those? Like, it's already, you can literally watch the game, just watch all the cutscenes. It's like watching a show. So that's one that I think would be very easy to turn into a stellar TV show.
Uncharted was okay film. I don't think they did a very good job with the Uncharted series or movie with Tom Holland. I don't know. I just feel like I don't think Tom fit that role. I think Marky Mark would have fit the role better than Tom Holland.
I, I don't know how you do an Uncharted movie and not just have everybody say this is Indiana Jones. Like, that's kind of the problem.
That's the problem. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's like, come on. Like, it's just Indiana Jones. Like, it's, and I know they did the Tomb Raider movie. I still think they need to reboot Tomb Raider and have Lauren Cohen be Lara Croft. I think she's a superior Lara Croft. She literally looks and sounds like her. But, and I think that works. Like, Tomb Raider as a brand is, I think, better than like, for a TV show or movie. I think it's better. Like, Uncharted just ends up feeling like Indiana Jones ripoff, which it's not, because it's just a fantastic game, but you put it into a movie form. That's what people are going to say. People are saying Stellar Blade. Yeah, for sure. I wonder why people would want that to be a show.
You know what would be a great series? And you can have this series run for 10 years. Mass Effect. Mass Effect would be a wonderful, I mean, it's a wonderful game.
Yeah.
But you put that into like a mini series, you put that on like an HBO or Amazon or whatever, man, I would watch that week by week, and then I would binge watch it once it's all done.
I think I never saw the Assassin's Creed movie because it did so poorly, but I think Assassin's Creed could also be a great show, because you could have every season be an era of time, so you get to kind of reset the cast, reset the time period. That could be really fun if they do it right, because that obviously is the frustration with some of the movies like Assassin's Creed and Uncharted and others, is they end up feeling like just like a brand grab. Like, we're just going to grab this brand and try and make something. And Fallout and The Last of Us, I think, have hopefully charted a course that your show or movie is going to be way more successful if you really try to honor what you're pulling from, as opposed to just grabbing the name and trying to make some, you know, chintzy throwaway movie.
Wouldn't Mass Effect just run like Star Trek? No. I mean, sure, they're both in space, and I guess, yeah, and they both have ships and crews. I guess I see the comparison, but no, they're completely different.
I mean, come on. There's a lot of famous science fiction shows that went on for a very, very long time. You know, there was Battlestar Galactica. There was all of the different versions of Star Trek. Firefly, rest in peace, Firefly.
Oh, Sven says they are making a Mass Effect series. They are. I haven't heard it.
Was The Expanse.
Hush.
So a Mass Effect series could crush. I think it could do great. Yeah, Stargate. Like, I think a Mass Effect show could be its own very unique approach, you know, to sci-fi, and be awesome. And I think they could, and all of the people historically that have watched The Expanse or Star Trek, they would eat it up. Like, if they do, see, that's the thing you got to do with a show like Mass Effect. It needs to be great sci-fi, but also be great Mass Effect, and then you get both. You get all those people that love Star Trek and The Expanse and Battlestar. You get all of those people, you know, to come in. Then you also get the people who love Mass Effect.
Yeah, there's you know, this is what they're going to, right? Just like they do with the comic books to make into films, this is exactly what they're going to do to make them TV shows and movies. They're going to start dipping into the pot of video game franchises.
I also love shows over movies, because you get a lot more time to spend. Yep. Like, I know Netflix has the rights to Narnia right now, and I'm like, please do shows. Every book is a season, because then you have 8 hours to work your way through that book, you know? And it's like the kids' age, so you don't have to worry about that. Like, the books skip a lot of time. You don't have to worry about, you know, what if, because child actors are always tough, because then they, all of a sudden, like, when you're watching Stranger Things, you're like, they aren't kids anymore. Like, you know, they're adults running around pretending to be kids.
He's 13. He doesn't look 13. Yeah.
They're as tall as all of the adults.
I always thought they could always do. And this is what I wanted this to happen with. You ever watch Smallville back in the day?
Yes.
Okay. I wanted Smallville to, the end of Smallville was the Superman movie. Like, I wanted him to become Superman. Like, I wanted him to go into that Superman role. I always think, especially with movies like this, like if they do you know, Fallout, they do a Fallout TV series and then they make a movie, right? It's like the culmination of what that season one was, with a big, so this year you have a series, next year you have the movie, the following year you have season two, then you have the end, the following year after that, another movie. I don't know why studios don't do this type of stuff, because they would make so much more fans, and also more business sense, because people will be like, wait a minute, there's a series before the movie. You know, Marvel tried to do this, but the problem with Disney Plus, with the like WandaVision and all that other stuff, it's just too much. There's so many shows that you have to watch, and then they don't go back and touch any of it for the film. They're just like, it's like a throwaway line. It's like, oh, you murdered everyone in the town? That's not a big deal. We're just going to move on to the next thing. It's like, what? It's like, that's not what you're... You wouldn't do that, right? So I think if they do it correctly, if they make a Fallout series like they did, make a movie, make a 2-hour film to kind of like give more and then go into season two, give it continuation.
Somebody said they're surprised I didn't say Returnal. Returnal would make an amazing movie. It would.
Not a series.
It would not make for a good series because you need to encase the story. The idea of being stuck in the cycle, the idea of finding her own dead bodies, and the special effects they could use in the shooting. I don't think that makes for a good series because it's primarily her. Like it's Celine,
right,
and there's nobody else around. So kind of like how they did with Moon, with Sam Rockwell, you know, with that's a great movie, by the way, if you want to see a movie kind of in that realm of just the what in the heck's going on. Moon was fantastic. And Sam Rockwell is he's not in enough. I love him. I put him in more movies. He's in that movie and in Matchstick Men. He's fabulous.
Oh, that was a good role. Yeah.
So I think Returnal would make for a really, really good movie, not necessarily a show. Sci-fi Groundhog Day a little bit. Which, if you haven't played Returnal, oh my gosh, play Returnal. It's on PC and it's on PlayStation 5, and it is a fabulous rogue. And it also has co-op, and it also has the Tower of Sisyphus content. It's a really great game.
I never thought about it that way. It's a sci-fi Groundhog's Day. That's good.
Yeah, that's really what rogues are, right? It's like, well.
Yeah, I know. I love Groundhog's Day. It's a great movie.
Gotta do it again. Yeah. My wife and I have been playing Gunfire Reborn. Too many words here. Ghosts and guns and everything else. Gunfire Reborn. Because RoboQuest is this amazing shooter rogue. So good.
Great game.
And it's so fun co-op. So my son was playing it. I was like, oh, I wish I could play that with my wife. But it's on Xbox and it's on PC. And I don't want to put a PC in the living room to try to play. So I was like, well, everybody talked about Gunfire Reborn being a really good rogue as well. Very, very Borderlands-esque is all, you know, in feel and vibe. And so we got that on PS5. And we have been playing the heck out of it. It is really, really fun. And just that is such a great, you know, Zubair calls it bite-sized gaming. That's why I think rogues are so fun, because we can do one run and then we're done for the night.
Yeah, that's why. Is that on all consoles or just on PlayStation?
I believe it's on all. Yeah.
What's it called? Gunfire?
Gunfire Reborn. I believe it's on all platforms. I believe it's like on Steam. I don't know about Switch. Fairly certain it's on every platform, and it is. I don't think you can do split screen co-op, but you can do online co-op is how we do it, obviously.
Right.
Is it on Game Pass? Well, there you go. That's easy. If it's on Game Pass, yeah, check. My wife and I might play that tonight for you guys, for the members. You guys hit the goal, so we are going to do the two controllers Ghost of Tsushima stream. We'll let you watch us do some duels. But we're going to show you some Gunfire Reborn tonight. It's really, really fun. We're getting stronger, and you unlock different characters. That's another thing I really like about it, is when you unlock a character, they have a very distinct feel. I unlocked the guy. It's like the first guy you can unlock after the main starter.
Does it feel like RoboQuest? It feels similar.
It feels similar to RoboQuest, yes, but the weapons... it's actually very similar to RoboQuest, because the weapons have a lot of identity and you get familiar with the weapons. You're like, you know which ones you like. My character right now can basically gunzerk, like from Borderlands 2. I can pull out two weapons. So I know the weapons that I want. And the other night I told my wife, I looked at the perks and what I had. I was like, babe, my build is busted right now. I'm going to melt bosses. And I did. I was just shredding. It was so fun. Like, it was when you get that nice combination of perks and you know, you're like, oh, my build is really strong. Yeah, it's a fun game. So
I'm gonna play this with my son this weekend. That looks good.
Yeah. Yeah, give it a try. At first she was like, wait, why are we back at the beginning? She was like, what are we doing?
And I was like, she didn't understand that it was a rogue.
But now she's into it, so we'll be playing and she'll be combing over the weapons and she knows what to look for. Like, she knows what she likes and what she doesn't like. So that, I love when that happens, like when somebody catches the vision of a rogue, because I didn't like them for the longest time. But when you're married and you got like an hour to kill, it's perfect. It's like one run. We get as far as we can, and we usually die within 45 minutes to an hour or so. And then like, yeah, one run, and there's meta progression. You're leveling up skill trees, and it's just, it's a good time. And we'll be playing that tonight for you guys. Yeah, a lot of people like Risk of Rain too. I didn't like that one as much.
Someone asked me if I wanted to play that, and I was like, it didn't really interest me. I like the art style of this one, Gunfire Reborn.
Yeah. Gunfire Reborn predates RoboQuest, I believe. And I remember always wanting to play it because I was like, oh, it kind of has a Borderlands vibe. And Rogues, the thing I wish with Returnal, because you can play that co-op, I wish you could save co-op. Like, I can save a checkpoint in that. Like, I can be like, oh, I made it to Biome 2. I'm going to come back tomorrow. But you can't do that co-op, which is an enormous bummer. Because, like, my wife and I, there's no way we're going to do, a multi-biome run in an evening. It's just too difficult. It takes too long. So I wish they would do that for that update for Returnal. They're not going to, but it'd be nice if they did. Because that's a great Rogue as well. That's Returnal is the Rogue that got me into Rogues, if I'm honest.
I put in, 30 hours on RoboQuest. I got into it and I was like, man, this is good. This feels good. And my son is the one that introduced me to it. He's like, hey, I think there's a game that you would like. I was like, well, what is it? And he's like, it's this robot. And I played it and I was like, oh, this is good. He's like, and he's watching me. He's like, do you like it? And I'm like, yeah, it's actually got pretty good bones to it. And he's like, okay. He's like, you want to play together? I was like, yeah, let's do it. And we just kept playing over and over and over. And next thing I know, 32 hours later,
yeah,
I'm inside the game. I have all the things leveled up, all the characters unlocked. I liked it. I liked it a lot.
I got introduced to it when I was at, Thanksgiving with my nephews, and every time we could play, we were all playing together. Two of us, obviously, because it's just two-player co-op. Did you beat the boss who, fills the room with bullets? Like, it's like they're coming from all angles. It's crazy.
Is that the snake, or is that the one that you're jumping on the platform going up? I remember there's a couple different bosses. There's a guy that I jumped into a room and had to run around in like a spiral or whatever, and just guns were going everywhere.
That might have been it, because I think there was a platforming aspect to it. But he did this thing where I was like, I don't even know what we're supposed to do. He just filled the room with bullets. We just died. It was fun though. We had a good time with it.
Yeah, there's a lot of good little boss fights and little hidden things too. Like, you can find little hidden give the swimwear to the guy underneath the waterfall or whatever. Yeah. There's a whole bunch of stuff that you can find and do.
Did you do the one where you grab the buddy bot and you got to take him to the next area to get through the door? Like, he opens the door for you?
No, I didn't do that, because there's also things that you have to do where there's guys. You have to have a certain amount of, I don't know what it is, collect a couple things, but you have to get through the door under a certain amount of time to get to that checkpoint, and then that door will open. And if that door opens, then you can get the, I've never done
that. Yeah, you got to go really fast. And then there's the code on the wall.
Yeah, I got the code.
And it's different every time. They're real smart about that. Like, it's different every time, so you got to write it down.
I missed it by 3 seconds to do the timer one. I was like, I never went back and did it.
I did that a couple times with my nephews. Like, we went fast enough. And Brotato's getting an update. It's going to have co-op. Brotato's really fun. Brotato.
Yeah, I played that. Addicted to that too.
There's a co-op update coming. I'm gonna play that one with my son. It's such a fun
new maps,
game.
Right? A new area. I think it is.
New area, enemies, weapons, new characters, and co-op. I don't know when that's happening. I'm gonna look that up really quickly.
Isn't it funny when you play games like that and you're like, yeah, it's good, and then we're so nitpicky to the other games, like. We're like, Starfield's graphics are just so, but meanwhile we're like, yeah, Brotato, awesome game. it's like we correlate free or cheaper games to what the standards are for those games compared to the AAA games, and we just
Brotato, Abyssal Terrors, and Loco Co-op. That's the DLC called. It's called Abyssal Terrors. It's coming in the summer is what it says right now. We don't have an official release.
Co-op Brotato. Yeah. You gotta have friends.
It looks so fun, dude. Four player couch co-op.
It's four player co-op?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm. That's gonna be wild. I'll play that with I'm gonna have to get Xbox controllers. I only have one right now because all the other ones got stick drift. I'm gonna have to get some stinking Xbox controllers because that's only on Xbox right now.
And that's why they did it, so they can make more peripheral sales.
They got me. They're gonna get me to get more controllers. These son of a. Oh man, Brotato wasn't touted as gonna redefine the gaming landscape. This is true. The developers from Brotato didn't say their game was gonna be generational defining.
Yeah. No, I'm just saying in general. I'm not. I love how I said that. Now everyone's like on it. Oh, well, they lied to us about the solar system. It's like the game's got literally space with 1,000 planets and Brotator. You're on one map with boundaries, by the way. Right? And we're like, yeah, it's fine. It's fine.
Oh, my gosh. Guys, I am going to set up the VIP stream. If you are a member or luckily you were enough to get a gifted member, you might get some more. We're really close to the next milestone of 75, and I'll give 5 more. If you did that, you can tune in tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern and watch my wife and I. We hang out and talk for a couple hours, and then we're going to do something fun in Tsushima, and then we're going to show you. We're going to play some Gunfire Reborn for you guys. It's going to be a blast. All members can come to that. We're going to go to a VIP stream. It's the one thing you have to upgrade for. Once a week, I do a VIP stream. While I'm setting that up, Mike, where can they find you, and what are you doing right now with your content?
So you can find me over on 30NSG. I stream Monday through Thursday from 10 o'clock in the morning till about noon Eastern. We just cover conversations of news stories, reaction videos. Come on by. We have conversation. I one-on-one. Whoever's in the chat, go back and forth with conversation. We do uploads. We do live streams. We do gameplay. We do podcasts. I've been doing shorts. I've been dabbling in the shorts. I had one go almost 7,000 views.
I'm
very, very impressed with that one. So, yeah, I've been doing a lot of different content. So come on by Monday through Thursday, 10 o'clock in the morning till noon Eastern or 8 p.m. to midnight.
And that is a great place to go if you're looking for stuff in the evenings, especially like a podcast in the evenings on Thursdays, because I don't stream in the evenings, guys. So his name is clickable in the description, 30NSG. He's here with me every Friday. And then we hop on a call. My producer joins us. If you're a gifted member, by the way, we opened up the writer's room to you guys this week, as well as the Discord, as well as Friday nights. Like, my wife's going to be on camera tonight. We're not going to put her behind the emoji anymore. We're just saying, look, a member is a member. So I hope I see a bunch of you here tonight. It's going to be a blast. And the gunfire gameplay is going to be worth it. That we have a lot of fun. She talks a lot of smack to me when we play games like that. Like I'm not pulling my own weight. So I'm going to provide you guys with a link of where we're headed. And if you're a VIP, you can join us. If not, I hope to see you tonight. I hope a bunch of you members decide to come and hang out tonight. If not, if we don't see you tonight, you know, we'll obviously see you next week on Monday. I'm going to be doing a show, I believe, about Starfield on Monday. And then Kirk and I will be talking about Stellar Blade. The Monday is already booked, and it should be a blast. Before we get out of here, though, guys, smash that like button. I need about 30 more of you to give it a smackaroony, and that'll definitely help this video find more folks, even when I'm not live. Thanks so much for being a VIP or higher. Those of you that are at the higher VIP levels, we are asking you to jump down to the $10 VIP. There's like a $15 and a $25 tier. We're going to be deleting those tiers eventually, so I need you to downgrade. I know it's weird for me to say, give me less money, but it's just going to be a lot clearer to only have like 2 or 3 member tiers instead of 5. So we want to shrink the member tiers down. So if you want to give me more money than the standard $10 VIP, you can super chat or you can gift other members. That's just as helpful. And it gets more people in the member pool. I'm going to end the talk that Mike and I had about Fallout. Well, Fallout's kind of having a moment.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.